Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. Hendrik Hertzberghs has been a life of letters and one well lived. He's been a Navy officer, he toured with the Grateful Dead, and he was President Jimmy Carter's speechwriter. These days, he's a senior editor and the main political commentary voice at the New Yorker magazine. He's in town for the Auckland Readers and Writers Festival, and he's with us now. Hendrik, hi. I gather from reading your blog that you had a very pleasant landing in New Zealand.
Oh, yes, indeed. The contrast, the only thing that kind of marred it was thinking back on how awful it is to land in New York. And how unfriendly we are to foreign visitors and how we treat them with suspicion and contempt. And then they're thrust out onto the sidewalk to be fleeced by bogus taxi drivers.
I have to say that the last time I went to your country, I was hectored, interrogated, and treated like a criminal.
At JFK Airport, I got yelled at for daring to sort of reach over to show him exactly where the visa was in my passport. He said, "Don't step back. And then he handed me the wrong passport back, which then caused problems down the line when I realized I had my traveling companion's passport and vice versa. Why was I trying to travel on a female? But here, they just say, "Oh, g'day, welcome to New Zealand, come on through," you know, sort of thing. It's great, isn't it?
Do you hold any hopes that America's going to chill out in that respect?
Well, the problem is, as with so many things, is a stupid federal system. So the airports are all controlled by unaccountable authorities. But yeah, I have some hope. I have some hope for that. At least Obama has some consciousness of how maybe we should treat the rest of the world with a bit more respect. When I came in, maybe you can tell me this. Is it normal when you land in New Zealand and you're going from the plane to passport control, is it normal for there to be a recording of birds chirping?
I read that, and I can't remember it, but usually I'm in a bit of a fug after 30 hours on a plane. I don't sort of, if there's birds chirping,
touch,
it could be, could be completely in my mind.
No, but it could have been a hallucination.
It could well be true. We're quite proud of our birds here. Look, I'm just, your life, I'm reading through your biography, that it looks like a condensed thinking man's Forrest Gump. I mean, Harvard University, working for Newsweek. I mean, you covered the Grateful Dead, the last Beatles concert, conscientious objective to the Vietnam War, speechwriter for Jimmy Carter, editor at the New Yorker. I mean, you've been living the American dream, haven't
really?
You?
Really? Don't forget my 6 months of hanging around with John Lennon.
Well, just leave now. But it sounds like you've lived the American dream.
I never thought of it that way. Never, ever in a million years thought of it that way. The American dream is to hit it big with some innovative new industrial or IT idea, and then to become a zillionaire.
I was thinking maybe in more of a John Steinbeck kind of American dream sort of way. I mean, you've been, you know, you seem to, you'll be bleeding red, white, and blue. So American is your experience.
Oh, that is so. I'm going to internalize that. And, from now on, I'm going to be a very happy person.
Now, our listeners may not necessarily understand the significance of The New Yorker and what it's about. Could you explain that to us, what The New Yorker is and what it stands for?
Well, The New Yorker is a weekly magazine, and it's unique, I guess, among weekly magazines in that it kind of addresses the whole human experience. And we have reportage, articles about politics, and then about just interesting people. We've got fiction, we've got poetry, we've got cartoons, we've got listings of things to do around New York, which aren't really listings of things to do. They're more for people who don't live in New York and are fantasizing about it. And because it's such a big country, even though we have a very large circulation of 1 million, that's just a relatively small niche of the whole population. So it's a fanatically loyal readership. And it's a kind of literary magazine, but it's also a mass magazine. I guess there's really nothing quite like it in the rest of the world. Nothing like it at home either.
The only other thing I can think of as a literary magazine that takes it such a broad brief is the New York Review of Books, which again doesn't confine itself to any particular book.
That's
review.
Right, and the New York Review of Books is my favorite periodical. The one that I reach for most eagerly. But New York Review of Books is only one-tenth the size of The New Yorker.
With something like The New Yorker, it's heavy intellectual reading, but it's also accessible. I'm interested behind the scenes there. Is there arguments that go on as to whether such an article is selling out or too tabloid, or is everyone pretty much in the same direction?
Well, There were, when Tina Brown was the editor, she's the one that brought me back to the New Yorker after a 15-year absence, and I'm nothing but loyal to her. But there was plenty of feeling then among old readers of the New Yorker that she was tarting it up and having too many articles about celebrities and all that.
But I mean, it's still gloriously unfashionable. The first few pages are listings. There are very few photographs.
Yes, and the covers don't have any words on them. You know, the covers are. The cover is always a painting or drawing, sometimes with some comic intent, but not in any way related to what's in the magazine itself. It's a door rather than a window. Most magazine covers are a window that show you what's inside. The New Yorker is a door that covers a mystery. And so it's sui generis, really.
Hmm. Now, you normally, for the magazine and your blog on the website, cover politics.
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of the Republican Party's trajectory at the moment? How long can they go on the path that they're going on?
Well, they could certainly comfortably go on that path for another year. And I've never seen the Republicans in quite such bad shape as they are now. The out party is always in disarray. And the out party is always struggling for ideas and is castigating itself and is reacting like a wild animal. But I've never seen it quite this bad. And it is sort of worrying because eventually they will be back in power. They're the only alternative to what's in there now. And if what's in there now goes south in some way, then they'll be back, and we can only hope that they'll be that they'll have recovered their sanity by the time that happens.
Yeah, and I think that's a nice way of putting it, because I think centre-right parties in most countries, when they're out of power, the inclination is to move towards the centre and try and capture some more vote. The Republican Party's going in precisely the opposite direction, isn't it?
It is, and there's a dynamic at work there that is, as the party shrinks. It's kind of like a distillation, you know. It's like making 120 proof vodka. It gets more, and the alcohol content gets higher and higher, and the intoxication levels increase accordingly.
That's quite a nice way of putting it. Yeah, we've now even got things like, I think you wrote about it recently, that the governor of Texas threatening to secede.
Yeah, there's a lot of
kind of crazy.
There's a lot of sideshows of that sort going on. It's fun for liberals and Democrats to amuse themselves by watching the spectacle of more and more craziness coming from the other side. It could be a bit of a dangerous distraction in the long run, because we do have serious problems. But, you know, in hard times, you take your entertainment where you can find it.
Do you read the right-wing blogs? Because I know people who read those, they take a perverse delight in reading the craziest right-wing blogs.
I don't read the really nutty ones, but even the sane ones are nutty enough now. I do look at the National Review website and the Weekly Standard and a few of the others. And I do when I'm driving in my car and there isn't one of my favorite singers on the kind of folk rock station that I usually listen to. I do listen to talk radio. And I doubt that there's anything like talk radio, American talk radio, anywhere else in the world. Maybe in Franco, Spain, there was something like it.
Is there ever such a thing as left-wing talk radio?
They've tried. The left, when it was out, spent a lot of time flagellating itself about the success of right-wing talk radio and saying, how come we don't have our talk radio? And in fact, there is a network called Air America that was started to be the left counterpart to right-wing talk radio. It's kind of struggled along. It's never achieved remotely the popularity of right-wing talk radio. But I think it's pretty clear why this is. For angry white men and bitter people, talk radio is entertainment. And the real counterpart to it and counterweight to it is not left-wing talk radio, but the things that liberals find entertaining, i.e. entertainment. And one reason that, despite their total domination of talk radio and many other centers of influence, the right always feels beleaguered and put upon and that they're being victimized by the mainstream culture, is because the entertainment industry, the stories that you see in movies, on television, And then National Public Radio too, which has as big an audience as right-wing talk radio. These things are all weighted toward the cultural left. And so the right finds itself wondering why all of a sudden a gay marriage is okay, and even okay with the younger conservatives. And their paranoia will survive any amount of victories on their side.
Look, I'm sure that we could talk about this for hours, and it's been a pleasure having you on the show.
I was sitting up for a long one.
Maybe we'll get you back next time, next year when you're here again for the Writers and Readers Festival. Thank you very much for your time.
Oh, my pleasure.
Hendrik Hertzberg appears tonight at the New Yorker Night. Now, that's at the ASB Theatre at the Aotea Centre. If you're in Auckland, if there are door sales, I'm told it's very close to selling out. Door sales will be $45. Coming up after the break, we talk to Janie Godley from the New Zealand International Comedy Festival.